Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, we'll consider whether the gold standard for skeptical analysis, the scientific method, itself suffers from a lack of skeptical perspective, and what the moral consequences might be. Before we start, let me remind listeners that the Skeptical Ethics series attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, which appeared in Episode 2 of the Skeptical Connections podcast, and the second segment, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3 of Skeptical Connections, for useful background. There's been a lot of talk in the scientific community recently about the reliability of scientific research and of published research reports. There are many issues. Journal articles tend to report only positive, not negative, experimental results, so counter-evidence against a given scientific claim goes overlooked. So-called big data projects are often subject to a kind of confirmation bias in which extensive automated statistical analysis, or data dredging, turns up seeming positive relationships that are really just the random results of performing random correlation tests, some of which inevitably turn out positive. The number of papers retracted for procedural errors or outright fraud seems to be skyrocketing, pointing to a previously overlooked weakness in the scientific literature. One of the most significant issues was raised in a widely discussed paper in August 2005 in the online journal PLOS Medicine by John Ioannidis, entitled Why Most Published Research Findings Are False. Ioannidis cites research indicating a high rate of refutation of published scientific data by subsequent replication experiments, and provides statistical analysis indicating the surprisingly high probability of false results from standard research methodologies. He finally concludes that, quote, "There is increasing concern that in modern research, false findings may be the majority or even the vast majority of published research claims. However, this should not be surprising. It can be proven that most claimed research findings are false." End quote. That's a shocking result, and we'll take a closer look at Ioannidis' reasons for making this claim. But his paper set off a groundswell of discussion and has been widely accepted as an important contribution on the issue of reliability of scientific methodology. A more recent contribution comes from respected science writer Ed Yong on his Scientific American blog, Not Exactly Rocket Science. In a post from April 10, 2013, entitled, "Neuroscience cannot do it, Captain. It doesn't have the power." Right. Yong discusses the technical issue of statistical power, defined as the probability that a given experiment will return results that lead to the correct rejection of the null hypothesis, given that the null hypothesis is in fact false. Or, in other words, the probability of a true positive result where a positive result is the correct outcome. Basically, statistical power is a measure of how well-designed an experimental study is. Low power indicates that the study is likely to miss a real phenomenon even if there is one there, typically because of a small sample size or a small actual magnitude of the measured effect. Yong reports that reviews of the scientific literature indicate that many published papers report experiments that were conducted with very low statistical power. Researchers commonly agree that statistical power of about 80% is appropriate for experimental protocols, but a review of every neuroscience meta-analysis published in 2011, covering a total of 730 papers, showed that those experiments had an average statistical power of 21%. A review, also by John Ioannidis, of meta-analyses of brain volume studies between 2006 and 2009, covering 461 papers, showed an average statistical power of 8%. Similar studies in other fields produce similar results. The problem here is not simply that researchers are conducting inefficient research, likely to miss real positive findings. The analyses just mentioned showed not only that the power of the studies conducted was low, but that the percentage of positive results from such studies was unexpectedly high, indicating that the scientific literature has an excess of published positive results from low-probability studies, and thus that the expected negative results from such studies were not published, giving a distorted view of the actual results of research in these fields as a whole. As John Ioannidis wrote in his study of statistical power in brain volume research, quote, "Meta-analyses identify significant associations for specific brain volumes and structures for almost any disease and condition assessed," end quote. Thus, low statistical power is also associated with a tendency to publish positive results from studies with low sample sizes and small measured effects, and systematically or unconsciously suppress contrary results from equally or more reliable studies. That leads us back to Ioannidis' startling claim that most scientific research reports are false. I should emphasize here that he is not referring to deliberate fraud, scientific misconduct, or incompetent or error-prone research. Ioannidis claims that most papers that accurately report competent and effective scientific research, using accurate mathematical analysis of the measured data, nonetheless include conclusions that do not match reality and cannot be replicated by further studies. How could this be? Ioannidis identifies a number of factors that can reduce the positive predictive value, or PPV, of an experimental result, defined as the probability that a positive result in an experiment is true. Positive predictive value is not the same as statistical power, which again is the probability that a true result will be found if it exists. These factors include low sample sizes, small absolute effect sizes, indiscriminate testing of hypotheses to find incidental relationships, changing the experimental protocol to increase positive results, and experimental conflicts such as financial incentives or competition between research teams. Some of these are violations of good scientific procedure, but some are simply mathematical consequences of certain research scenarios. Ioannidis develops a mathematical model of experimental bias, which he defines as the likelihood of inappropriate or scientifically ungrounded results being generated given the influence of these factors. For even relatively small percentages of unsupported results, in experiments with low measured effects and low statistical power, the PPV of the experimental results can be well below 50%. Ioannidis concludes, quote, "In the described framework, a PPV exceeding 50% is quite difficult to get," end quote. Or, in other words, most reported experimental results are probably false. Obviously, the actual likelihood of false results depends on the specific factors previously noted, and so varies between individual studies and between different types of studies. But Ioannidis makes some important observations. Quote, "Research findings from underpowered early-phase clinical trials would be true about 1 in 4 times, or even less frequently, if bias is present. Even well-powered epidemiological studies may have only a 1 in 5 chance of being true." End quote. Note that these specific instances he cites of very low probabilities of true positive experimental findings are experiments with direct implications for practical medical application, screening trials for medical treatments, and surveys of possible causes of diseases. They are also the bedrock of clinical medicine. Every new proposed drug or treatment protocol goes through early and then later phase clinical trials, and every possible new disease is identified through epidemiological screening. Such studies are vital to effective clinical medicine. Yet many of these studies, conducted under marginal conditions, are far more likely to be false than true. So, both the conduct of poorly designed or low-power studies and the presence of culpable or even unavoidable bias in experimental protocols leads to a situation in which many published research results are of questionable reliability, even when the underlying research procedures and statistical analysis are at least superficially correct. And some of the least reliable instances are found in clinically significant medical research directly implicating treatment of human disease. This brings us to the obvious ethical implications of such research. It's understood that scientific findings are always provisional. Statistical significance is only a probability estimate that the given findings are true, and the likelihood of false results is increased under circumstances that are sometimes difficult to avoid. For instance, it can be very difficult or expensive to use large, statistically robust sample sizes in an experiment, and if the effect being measured is very small, the sample size needed to produce compelling results may be impossible to achieve. And, of course, experimental results have to be interpreted, and scientific theories are always open to challenge and revision. But it's also obviously dangerous to base important practical actions, such as medical treatments, on scientific grounds at the very margins of reliability, and far more so when those results may actually be not just possibly false, but, as Ioannidis argues, more likely false than true. Taking such risks with patient safety is a grave issue, even if there is no better information available on which to base decisions. But knowingly encouraging unproven treatments by indulging in experimental procedures that produce essentially deceptive results is unethical. As I said, some degree of uncertainty is inherent in any research finding, but poor study design can create uncertainty where there should be less, and that is the issue addressed here. How to avoid falling into that trap? The obvious answers are to design experiments with sufficient statistical power and to avoid the confounding factors cited by Ioannidis in his study of bias and low positive predictive value. Also key is to acknowledge and minimize researcher conflicts and the distorting motivations of competition or self-promotion. designing and then adhering to appropriate experimental protocol specifically framed to provide statistically robust results from studies of carefully selected subject effects is the most important way to increase statistical power and positive predictive value, and thus to generate results that are reliable and also an efficient use of experimental effort. Doing so is a method for increasing the probability that discovered effects are true and that practical action based on them is as likely to be effective as it is possible to guarantee. The ethical touchstone of medical research. However, those observations are obvious and somewhat superficial. Employing critical thinking in designing experimental protocols is such an obvious necessity, even if it is often overlooked, that it is no breakthrough to suggest it, and it is nothing new to the experienced scientific researchers who perform the kinds of studies in question. But there are surprising complications to take into account. Ed Yong points out in his article on the problem of low statistical power that there are in fact benefits to conducting low-powered studies. They are often quick, preliminary investigations that serve to identify possible effects for more rigorous testing. Not every new idea can be subject to a full, large-scale, high-powered experimental review, so the ability to identify possible but uncertain avenues for later research can be highly productive. Also, as John Ioannidis's discussion of distorting effects makes clear, not all of the problems with clinical research result from experimenter misconduct. Some of them are inherent to the type of phenomenon being studied or to the study population in which it is found. It may not be practical or even possible to conduct studies with high PPV in certain cases, but it may still be possible to advance knowledge even with less certainty than desired by doing what is possible. In the end, proper design of experimental protocols is a delicate balance between the practical possibilities at hand, the mathematical requirements for reliable results, and the need for new knowledge, especially in practical fields such as medicine. The ethical significance of the outcome, especially in applied fields, raises the stakes and complicates the making of that balance. It also requires us to take into account the surprising uncertainties lurking in the published literature when putting such results to use. This becomes an exercise in morally informed critical thinking at every step, in designing experiments, interpreting the results, and then relying on them, or not. I'd be glad to hear your comments or questions directed to skepticalconnections.com.